Depending on how the next few weeks goes, it sounds like.
We will have Jolene Walsh open our meeting for us here at... So, good morning. Welcome to the March 3rd, 2021 meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District. Before we do the Pledge of Allegiance, may I ask the Secretary to call the roll and make sure Director Record and our legal counsel is on the line.
Sure. Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Director Record?
Here.
Legal counsel?
Here.
Very good. With that, I will invite everybody to rise, and may I ask Jeff Wall if he would be so kind as to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning.
Chime in and pledge our flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very good. April, do we have any guests this morning that are joining us?
We have Rick Bishop with WRCOG on the line.
Okay.
And this morning we actually have a special introduction, if we could play the video for our new Savvy the Water Drop animation.
Did we want to do that now? Okay.
Have you ever looked at the water coming out of your faucet and wondered where that water comes from? Hi there, everyone. I'm Savvy the Water Drop. Your water comes from EMWD, sure, but where did EMWD get the water from? You may think I was born and raised here in Southern California, but I'm actually all the way from Colorado. That glass of water you're drinking is probably full of water from lots of faraway places. The first is the Colorado River Aqueduct. This big man-made canal brings us a lot of what we use, but it's not enough. We also get water from the Sierra Nevada snowpacks. In the summer, when the snow melts, it flows down to another huge aqueduct that transports the water more than 500 miles along the mountains all the way down to Southern California. These aqueducts are so important to make sure that Southern California stays hydrated. But this isn't our only source of water. We also have some water right here under the ground that we pump up. But some of the water underground is a little saltier than I am.
Hey kids, I'm Salty Sally.
Hi Salty, why don't you tell us a little bit about our underground water?
Sure thing. When we pump up the water from underground, it's salty, like me. We have to remove some of the salt and other stuff to make me clean and drinkable. Removing the salt lowers the salinity of the water. It sure does, and the process of lowering the salinity is called desalination. After desalination, I'm fresh and clean and ready to be delivered to your faucet.
Well, now you can see how hard it is to get water to the faucet in your home
or on the slip and slide outside your home.
Till next time, bye.
Very good.
And we also happen to have in person our Savvy the Water Drop.
All right. Hello, Savvy. All right.
So she would
mask
like to just, with a mask, she is
on.
Following all of our protocols.
Okay.
And she's happy to attempt
okay.
to find her number one fan.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Savvy.
You got to put a mask on for the picture.
Savvy, would you like to take a picture with our general manager?
There you go.
So thank you for our introduction of Savvy the Water Drop.
Thank you. Could I? That's a great little video. I think I may have learned a thing or two on it. Where is that going to play at?
It will play on our website, through our social media, as well as in our education programs with the presentations that we do to the schools.
Okay. Very good. Well, that again, kudos to your team for doing that. So. All right. With that, if Mr. Bishop could hold on and give us a few minutes, we do have a quick public hearing that I will now open. This is the time and place for the duly noticed public hearing regarding the proposed establishment of Community Facilities District number 2019-86, Terra del Sol of the Eastern Municipal Water District, the proposed rate and method of appointment and authorizing a CFD to interbonded indebtedness. I declare the public hearing open and would like staff to give us a report on the proposed action.
What? Yeah,
chili.
You could hold for 1 second. Could we get that? So we have people muted. Okay. Thomas, good morning. Good
morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Looks like I'm the lucky one to follow
Savvy.
So I
second thought that was you in the Savvy costume, so I'm glad you have dispelled that rumor.
There we go. On January 20th, 2021, the board adopted resolution number 2021-03, declaring its intention to establish CFD number 2019-86, Tierra del Sol, and resolution 2021-04, declaring its intention for the CFD to incur bonded indebtedness not to exceed $8 million. EMWD has received a signed petition by the Helen C. Rangans Family Bequest Trust, the original landowner, to form the CFD. Meritage Homes of California Incorporated has acquired the property and requested EMWD form the CFD to finance applicable EMWD water and sewer facilities costs in lieu of fees and facility improvements, and Temecula Valley Unified School District school fees and facility improvements. The project is planned for 139 lots and is located at the northwest corner of Benton Road and Poroy Road in the French Valley area of unincorporated Riverside County. Meritage Homes is expected to be the developer of the property, and the CFD will be established in compliance with the district's comprehensive debt policy, meeting or exceeding all requirements with the exception of the number of lots being 139, falling slightly below the district's guideline of 150. A thorough analysis has been performed on the proposed CFD, and it has been determined that the number of delinquent special tax payments that would cause a draw on reserves is similar to that of a CFD with 150 units. Therefore, the CFD does not pose a great risk of cash flow deficiency. Annual special taxes within the CFD will have an average effective tax rate of 2% or less at the time of bond sale, and special taxes may be levied at their assigned rate as soon as the parcel is considered developed. The board has received a CFD report for the CFD, which was prepared by the district special tax consultant, Webb Municipal Finance, which is hereby entered into the record of the public hearing.
Very good. I'd like to ask the secretary of the board how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on February 23, 2021 in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the CFD boundary in accordance with the Melrose Community Facilities Act of 1982.
Very good. If the secretary of the board has received any written protest to the proposal, I'd like to ask her to provide the copies to the board now.
No written protests to the proposal have been received.
Thank you. Since members of the public have been invited to participate in the hearing telephonically, I'd like to ask that any members of the public who would like to comment on this item, please do so now. Please state your name for the record before commenting. And do we have any members of the public who would like to participate?
No, we do not.
We do not. Okay, very good. With that, at this time, we are ready to adopt the following resolutions. Resolution to establish...
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. We need to... Mr. Chair, you need to close the public hearing.
I apologize. With that, we will close the public hearing since there are no speakers. Then at this time, we will adopt the following resolutions. Resolution establishing CFD number 2019-86, Tierra del Sol, Bayou Municipal Water District, authorizing the levy of special taxes and calling an election therein, and a resolution to determine the necessity to incur bond indebtedness within CFD number 2019-86, Tierra del Sol, and calling an election therein. I will accept a motion and a second to adopt these resolutions.
I will move to adopt these resolutions.
I'll second.
Adopted or moved by Director Slauson, second by Director Corona. Would you please call the roll?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The resolutions that we have just adopted to form CFD number 2019-86 authorized a special tax and call for a bond election within CFD number 2019-86, which is to be held at this time by the Secretary.
All ballots have been cast in connection with the election for Community Facilities District number 2019-86, Tierra del Sol of Eastern Municipal Water District, and the elections have now been closed. The results of said election, which includes the number of votes cast for and against Proposition A, B, and C, was unanimous in favor of all propositions.
Very good. Thank you. Having heard the statement of the Secretary certifying the results of the voting on the propositions, I will entertain a motion to adopt the following resolution. A resolution certifying the results of the March 3rd, 2021 special tax and bond elections within CFD number 2019-86, Terra del Sol of the Eastern Municipal Water District. I'll look for a motion in a second.
I would move adoption of the resolution.
No, second.
The resolution was moved by Director Slauson, seconded by Director Armstrong. I will ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The resolution is passed on a 5-0 vote. I will now ask the district's legal counsel if there is a necessity for the Secretary to read the proposed ordinance to be voted upon in connection with these proceedings with respect to authorizing the levy of a special tax within CFD number 2019-86.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reading of proposed ordinance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District, acting in its capacity as the legislative body of Community Facilities District Number 2019-86, Tierra del Sol, of Eastern Municipal Water District, authorizing the levy of a special tax within the district, may be waived since everyone present has a copy of the proposed ordinance or may obtain a copy from the district's website.
With that, I will accept a motion, a second, to waive a reading of the proposed ordinance and adopt the ordinance.
I would certainly move to waive the long reading of the ordinance.
I'll second that.
The long reading of the ordinance was made by Director Slauson, seconded by Director Corona. May I have a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The ordinance is passed on a vote of 5-0, and we will now return to the next item on our agenda, which is a recognition of someone who I think is a very special to the Southwest Riverside County area, and that is Rick Bishop, who is the Executive Director of the Western Riverside Council of Governments, known as WRCOG, who is retiring after a long and brilliant career there. So I will turn it over to Mr. Jones.
Thank you, President Pauley, members of the board. We have also present virtually today Rick Bishop, and I'd like to present a proclamation of the board in recognition of the career and service of Rick as Executive Director of Western Riverside Council of Governments. So I'll go ahead and read, whereas Rick Bishop has served as the Executive Director of WRCOG, a joint powers authority consisting of 18 cities, the County of Riverside, Eastern Municipal Water District, Western Municipal Water District, and the Riverside County Superintendent of Schools. And whereas Mr. Bishop has been responsible for developing and implementing programs in diverse areas such as transportation, energy, the environment, growth, and the economy, and whereas during his tenure as the Executive Director of WRCOG, Mr. Bishop has been widely recognized for his leadership and ability to successfully bring together agency partners from across the region to successfully lead programs and projects that have provided lasting benefits to the residents of Western Riverside County. And whereas WRCOG has offered programs that have provided Eastern customers and other residents in the region with billions of dollars in funding to retrofit their properties, become more water and energy efficient, and create a more sustainable footprint for future generations. Whereas Mr. Bishop has also helped WRCOG administer the Riverside County Habitat Conservation Agency, managing more than 40,000 acres of ecosystem-protected habitat for the Stevens kangaroo rat. And whereas Mr. Bishop and WRCOG have been valuable partners supporting EMWD's legislative efforts on behalf of its customers and surrounding the region, and have also been valuable partners in the efforts to create a sustained success for the Riverside County Water Task Force and the corresponding speaker series. So now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Board of Directors and the management and staff want to thank Mr. Bishop for his commitment to public service and his accomplishments as Executive Director of WRCOG, and wish him happiness in retirement. I just want to add When I first came to Eastern, we started to work extensively with WRCOG, and Rick reached out to me and was just a great partner all the way through, always appreciated the roles that the special districts played in the county and what an important part of government water and wastewater was, and, of course, their support for the Riverside County Water Task Force and the speaker series is just really brought that information out to many more people, and Rick has just done a fantastic job, and I just want to thank him personally for all the support he gave me and gave Eastern during my tenure at the district. So thank you, Rick. I don't know if you have any words you'd like to add.
Well, thank you so much, Paul, and right back at you, congratulations on your pending retirement. And thank you, President Pauley, and members of the board. I really appreciate the recognition. I just have to say one of the best things I think we ever did at WRCOG was to recognize that as we were moving forward to try to improve the economy in the sub-region, to realize that can't happen unless we have water experts at the table. So I think we're one of the few, if maybe not the only, COG in California that has water districts on board, and it has proven to be a very fruitful relationship to us and for us. So we appreciate the partnership we have with you. Director or President Pauley, I'm sorry that we're not able to work again together. There's no truth to the rumor that I'm retiring because you came back on the board, so I want to put that right now.
I appreciate you dispelling that right off the bat, okay?
Yeah, thank you very much. And we've also have really enjoyed being part of the Riverside County Water Task Force and the speaker series. I think that's been a great public service to members of the public and our elected officials. So I'm hoping that our paths cross again in the future. I've appreciated very much working with you, President Pauley, and with Director Record and Director Slauson, who have all participated on WRCOG. Sorry that we haven't been able to work with Directors Corona and Armstrong, but you've got a really strong board. You've got great staff. I'm still not bitter that you took Danielle from us. I'm getting over that. And we just look forward to many, many more positive years of Eastern's participation on WRCOG. But thank you so much for the recognition, and I look forward to seeing you all again.
If I could say something.
Please.
If I could add something. First of all, your protestations that your retirement has nothing to do with Director Pauley, that's fine, but the rumors still persist. And I'm not quite sure what to believe. But I will say, Rick, it was really nice working with you, and I couldn't think of a better person who could run that agency, not only with the administration of the TUMF program, but then the county sort of saddled WRCOG with the Habitat Conservation Agency. And you're just a consummate professional, and you really united the group. And there's a lot of competing interests involved, and you were able to maneuver and manage that agency better than anyone I could think of. So thank you for your service.
And if I could just chime in and say, I know it's well over a decade ago that ourselves and Western approached Rick about being part of WRCOG because, as he mentioned, as this area was expanding and growing, it did make some sense for the water districts to be involved. And I thought when we first approached Rick, it was going to be a long, drawn-out battle to become part of WRCOG, and it wasn't. Rick found a way to do it, and I think it has been beneficial to the region. Our water leaders series, I think, is hitting all-time attendance highs, even during the pandemic. And Rick, I just give you a lot of credit for having the foresight to bring the water industry into a local regional government COG. And I would, as you mentioned, we're one of the few that do that, but I would hope that COGs around the nation would probably look at the model that you set up and think that the water area, the water space needs to be part of that. So, again, congratulations on your retirement. I will miss working with you, but it was a fantastic journey, so thank you. And do we have any other directors, sir, that might want to say a few words about Rick Bishop? All right. Well, Rick, thank you again, and I'm sure we will – I'm sure all of our paths will cross again. So thank you so much.
Thank you all. Appreciate it very much. Have a great meeting.
Very good. With that, we will go to the general manager's report.
I have nothing to report today except a 9-pound, 9-ounce new grandson. Thank you.
All right. Congratulations on that. Laura?
Nothing today.
Okay. Mr. Kinetis?
No grandchildren yet.
No grandchildren
today.
Yet. Thank you. Okay. Joe, either a report or a grandchildren update?
No grandchildren, President Pauley, but I do have a couple of items. Okay. I wanted to update the board on. We have been working with Western Municipal Water District to establish a new water system interconnection to serve the March JPA, specifically to serve a development, the K4 logistics development by Lewis Corporation that is under construction. In order to do that, we need to amend our interagency agreement with Western. So we're in the process of finalizing that amendment, and that amendment will be brought forward to O&E committee later this month and to the board for consideration early April. Separately, I did want to mention to the board that we met with Metropolitan Water District staff this week to discuss the Diamond Valley Lake Marina infrastructure project. As you're aware, they are planning on providing permanent water and sewer facilities for the marina. Per our discussions, they would like Eastern to take the lead on the design and construction of those facilities, and we are in the process of developing a MOU with Metropolitan, which they plan on taking to their board for consideration this summer. Subsequently, once those facilities are constructed by Eastern and reimbursed by Metropolitan, we plan to enter into a long-term operational agreement whereby Eastern will operate and maintain those facilities and, again, be reimbursed by Metropolitan. So the project is moving forward. That's it.
If I can just make a comment with regards to the agreement with Western, I think it's really good that we can try to accommodate their needs, because ultimately it's not in our district per se, but the employees, the workers, the they're all, off. A lot of them are we do represent, and they serve the community. So
public comment.
Oh, there's a pup. Why is
the dog?
If I could just remind everybody, if you're on the phone, check and make sure you're on mute. I do appreciate, I'm a dog lover, I do appreciate dogs attending our meeting, but if you could double check that you're on mute, that would be great. Thank you, Joe, for that. Mr. Wall, do you have anything for us this morning?
Yes, just one item that may be of interest to the board. Yesterday I received a call from Metropolitan Water District. They're looking at the weather for this past year or past 2 years and anticipating that we may be entering another drought, and they're not saying we're there yet by any means, but they're definitely looking at it seriously. And so they've asked us if we would consider taking a larger portion of our water from Lake Skinner versus the Mills treatment plant. For those of you who are on the board, you recall back in 2013 or 14 during the drought, or I'm sorry, 2015, they asked us to switch our source of supply, where we typically would take 55-60% of our imported treated water from Mills and the balance from Skinner. They asked us to reverse that. So we were able to accommodate that request and pump harder from the south to the north, and shifting that line where we get Mills and Skinner water from the center of district more toward maybe northern Paris region. So they're asking us to take a look at that again and consider it. I need to consult with the general manager. This is the first he's heard of it. And talk about that, and then get back to Metropolitan. But that's, again, it's just forward planning. Metropolitan's very good at looking ahead and ensuring that they reserve our supplies for long-term droughts, and that's just a discussion we'll be having in the coming weeks.
Can I ask, would you expect, maybe based on the last time we did this, to have the customers notice anything in terms of taste or odor or...
Anytime we switch supplies, we will generally get 20, 30 phone calls because just the difference in taste. There is a slightly higher level of salinity in the water coming out of Skinner. So we do generally get a couple phone calls in that regard, but nothing major, nothing alarming, if you will. So we will typically work with PGA to ensure that we do notification in advance, post information on our website, et cetera, to ensure that the customers are aware that this is happening.
Okay.
Jeff, could you remind me, last time we did this, I forgot. Was there any kind of cost involved because of the rerouting of the pumping us?
Generally, it's not major, but we will probably incur an additional maybe $200,000 a year in pumping costs to pump from the lower elevations down by Lake Skinner up toward northern Paris. So
push more water uphill.
Okay. That's what I thought I remembered from that. So
in perspective, our electrical budget is like $13 million, so it's
It's nominal, but there's something. All right, very good. You'll keep us informed on that. And I just got to ask one other question just for my – what is the metrics that Met uses then to decide that we are in drought conditions? You said we're approaching it, but we're not there yet. Maybe I don't know if that's for you.
Help from Paul on this one, but they do look largely at the snow patterns and recent years' history of how they're getting snowpack in Northern California. As you're aware, this year it's been very low, very light. Mm-hmm. They do not have the amount of water content stored up in the mountains that they would like to see. We receive and have access to Metropolitan's water supply condition report. That's the colorful map that shows, you know, Lake Mead and Northern California, Southern California, Lake Powell, et cetera. So they stay abreast of all that information on a very weekly basis and update that information as they go. But that's one of many things, but largely it's mostly about the rainfall in Northern California as well as the water levels in Lake Mead and Lake Powell.
Metropolitan has what's called a water supply drought management plan. So it looks at during wet conditions, they put water into storage, and then during dry conditions, they stage the extraction of water from storage or use of their different sources of supplies. And it's a fairly sophisticated plan. They periodically provide an update to the Met board on the status of that. So they will look at storage. They will look at their available supplies, such as their fallowing agreements, and different opportunities they have to utilize water. But perhaps the board, we could come back and give a presentation to the board on that plan. I think it's pretty interesting, particularly as we start to go into a drought. But Met has a very, very well-organized way in which they deploy their storage during dry periods. I think it would be interesting for the board. So we'd be happy to bring something back on that.
I would welcome that as an informational item in the future.
Okay. We'll work with get that information from Met. Thank you.
Any other questions from the board to any of our management?
President Pauley?
Yes, Director Record.
Yeah, I was just going to add on to what Paul said. We could have Demetri or someone from Met come out and give a presentation if you'd like.
Yeah, I think I would welcome that opportunity if it's not too much trouble for them.
No, it would be appropriate. I mean, I think you're referring to the wisdom plan, right, Paul, or water surplus?
That's correct, yeah.
Update every month?
Yes.
Yeah, we should schedule that.
I'll go ahead and schedule that, Director Ecker.
Great idea. All right, with that, we will now move on to item 5, which is our consent calendar. I'd ask any members of the board if they'd like to pull an item for separate discussion or vote on the consent calendar. If Director Record, are you okay with the consent calendar?
Yes.
Okay, then I would look for a motion.
I'll move it.
Second. Director Record moves the consent calendar.
Second.
Director Armstrong seconds. Will you please call the roll?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Very good. That passes on a vote of 5-0. With that, we will go to our action calendar and item A, which is to approve and authorize acquisition of easement and temporary construction easement over a portion of assessor parcel number 486-160-036 in the city of Moreno Valley. Mr. Ward, good morning, sir.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. I come before you once again for another property acquisition. This one
that is your specialty.
It is my specialty, especially today. This is in support of the Paris North Groundwater Contamination Program, which, if you recall, is our largest grant award through Prop 1. And in essence, the expenses that we incur under that program will be reimbursed by the state up to 50%, not to exceed $44.5 million. Today's acquisition is in support of an extraction well as part of that program. We are pursuing an easement through the city of Moreno Valley on one of their city parks. You'll note that this item is flagged on the agenda as changed since committee. I want to thank Shayla for helping us this morning after, I think it was 8 a.m., she made final edits to this on our behalf to ensure that the board received the most recent information. Reason for that is we received the draft property appraisal after 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, and we had to refresh our cost estimate. I will cover these very quickly since they've come before you at closed session and under committee. But the takeaway here is the bedrock contours just north of Lake Paris indicate a relatively deep bedrock channel that our hydrogeologists, our planning group, or engineering group targeted a real property staff with acquiring a piece of property over that relatively narrow bedrock channel. As a program overview, you'll see the green rectangle to the north. Director Slauson, that is in your area. That's Paris Boulevard, just north of Bay. MWD owns that five-acre site, and that will become a treatment facility and actually house two other extraction wells. Because that is our going to be our regional treatment facility, the water that we extract from the south portion of the city of Moreno Valley will be pumped north through Kitching Street to that treatment facility. The site that we're talking about today is East Well 2 in the lower right-hand side of the slide. Part of the reason that we represent this image is while we know what's going on 800 feet below surface as it relates to the narrow bedrock channel, what's happening on land surfaces really makes the site acquisition so challenging. This entire area is fully developed. Most of these residential developments have CCNRs, which would not allow a potable extraction well to be constructed. So we had to get very creative. We began to partner quickly with the city of Moreno Valley. And for the last 18 months, we've been in negotiation with the city of Moreno Valley for East Well 1 at their corporate yard, which the board has authorized that acquisition, and East Well 2 at the city's Victoriano Park. This is a public park. It's actually shared between the city of Moreno Valley and the Val Verde School District. The Victoriano Elementary is in the northwest corner of the site. And, in fact, the green area is partially owned by Val Verde as well as the city. Staff developed over five different site alternatives. We sat down with the city of Moreno Valley, and based on their input, they recommended the southeast corner of that park. It minimizes the impact to the public, and on our side, it reduces our capital costs since we have a lot of piping infrastructure in that corner. We've been, in negotiation with the city engineer and the city manager, developed a number of key terms that we think represent a responsible and collaborative approach. We will design the facility to integrate with the city's current structure. You can see the existing restroom there. We will collect their feedback during a preliminary design review meeting. The city will, in turn, grant future utility easements, for example, Edison, at no cost to the district. The district's going to allow the city use of the area around our building, which is somewhat unique. We typically like to fence in or block in our facilities, recognizing that we have a shared use and a shared interest. We're going to allow shared use of some of the surface outside of our facility. We're acquiring a permanent easement totaling just over half an acre, and a temporary construction easement that's going to allow us to drill and construct this facility. And by pursuing the easement, it allows the city to stay in compliance with their Park Preservation Act. Proposed building elevation is shown as such. It looks like it's a CMU wall, block building, red tile roof, for a couple reasons. One, for site security, but more importantly, to enclose all of our equipment for noise mitigation and to demonstrate a minimal presence. This is a artist rendering of what the finished completed above grade facility may look like. We do expect to have additional security features around the perimeter of this building. EMWD has agreed to pay the negotiated fair market value escrow and title fees. I can tell you that appraisal came in yesterday evening at $95,000 for the permanent easement. We also agreed to pay the city permanent lost recreational use impacts, totaling $212,000 upon completion of our facility. However, we're requiring the city to reinvest that payment back into that particular park. So that affords us and the city a talking point for, there'll be a temporary distraction, there'll be a permanent building, but the reinvestment will occur back into this particular park. Other impacts to consider, I just confirmed with the hydrogeologist that they expect this well to extend 850 feet below ground surface. It will end up with an 18-inch diameter casing. So there's really no easy way to accommodate a facility of that size. We would typically contract out to our driller. They bring in a drill rig that exceeds 40 feet in height to minimize our presence there, reduce sound impact. We install sound wall curtains at 24 feet height. There will be a temporary impact to the park and its residents. Just no easy way to do this without making a little bit of dust and noise. Our recommendation to the board is to acquire the easements, permanent and temporary, estimated not to exceed fair market value of $96,000, to execute all subsequent agreements. They may include a joint use agreement with the city, the purchase and sale agreement, and appropriate the $365,500 for acquisition cost, loss of recreational use, additional survey and security of the site. With that, I'll be happy to take any questions the board may have this morning.
Any questions?
Yeah, I have a couple.
Do you have a question?
Let's go. Let Director Slauson and then Director Record.
The security fencing or the fencing, what is that going to look like?
Well, the temporary security fencing is going to be a 6-foot chain link fence that will be removed upon completion of the drilling and equipping.
Okay.
We want to avoid the contractor's panels because they're really easy to get through. So we're looking at a much more secure presence there.
Okay. I didn't catch that it was temporary. So, okay, that's
yeah,
good.
It is.
And then so are we still also going to have well one at the corporate yard?
We are. So if you recall, well, we need the extraction capacity of two wells to basically intercept that bedrock channel.
Right. Right. So the exhibit that said preferred meant preferred of other ones other than well number one at the corporate yard. The
Director Slauson, on that city matter, there was we looked at several different sites, and this was the preferred site, not as an alternative to well one.
Yeah. So we looked at we developed over 5 site plans at this park.
Right. So
and yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The city, what did they charge us for the corporate yard site?
Yes. We're acquiring a portion of that in fee, as well as a portion easement. But because that's not under their park funding, that will be a debit, a credit, if you will, to their MOU, where they owe EMWD for past project encroachments.
Okay. And that's, so they treated this one differently because it's at a park and there is an impact, there's reduced area.
Exactly. And the difference here as well, Director Slauson, is we will cut them a check for this acquisition, where in the other, on the corporate yard, because it's not park-funded, they're just going to be able to buy down their debt for that value.
Okay. And then the you wanted to integrate the aesthetics. You should also then have somebody go out once a month and graffiti the building and then remove the graffiti off of our building so that it kind of blends in better.
We'll do our best. Some of the additional security, I can tell you that the city has a substantial remote camera presence at this park, and we expect to integrate with their security system as well as ours.
Yeah, and I really was jesting because the city of Murray Valley has a graffiti program. They're really good at keeping graffiti down.
Yeah, this site is actually pretty well maintained for the fact that there is no fencing. It's open to the public 24/7.
I think it's great.
Very good. Thank you.
Director Record had a question.
Yeah, John, how was the $200,000 for lost recreation arrived at? Was it an appraisal? Was it a negotiation with the city?
It was a negotiation with the city. And it was agreed upon value. So early on, they were hoping to see other amenities totaling close to $800,000.
Can I follow up
on... thank you.
Yes.
Is there a formula for that, or is that just we start with a number and negotiate it, or is there a written formula for how you come up with such numbers?
A lot of it has to do with pain points, if you will. Okay. What might the permanent facility look like?
Okay.
How much time are we going to be there for drilling, what type of presence are we going to reflect during that construction? And so knowing the challenges that we've had with the 24-foot-high sound wall, parking material, the 24-hour drilling operation, we realize, hey, there is basically an impact to the residents, not just the residents that use the school or the park, but the residents that are in immediate proximity.
Okay.
Yeah, I would add that this is a small park. So taking off a half an acre is, you know, maybe substantial compared to if it was a 20-acre park.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
So in terms of the
usefulness. And it does sever and disturb the overall usability of the park.
Right.
And I think that because of the size of the park, that's exactly right, Director Slauson, it becomes a bigger issue.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a bit arbitrary. They have to come up with some number, though. But that's fine. I'm glad we negotiated that
number. If I can perhaps add a little bit more to the negotiation. And, John, if you can go back to the alternatives exhibit. Well, one other consideration that we use in negotiating with the city, we looked at an alternative site, as John mentioned, at this school district's own property, which is on the other end of the park. And we looked at the cost that would take us to extend our pipelines, our facilities, to that site. That was another consideration in making sure that whatever we negotiated with the city was, in fact, below what it would cost us to extend those pipelines and those facilities to the district or to the school district on site. And I can assure you the $212 that we negotiated was significantly below what it will cost us to accommodate the alternative site.
Yeah, thank you, Joe, for that, because I'd forgotten about that process, but that was very critical. What we estimated was all of the capital infrastructure, the potable water, the Edison power, and the wastewater, basically the sewer system. The capital cost estimated to extend to this alternative, which is at the school site, was $313,000. Mm-hmm. And while we continued to negotiate with the school, we shared that number with the city, and in good faith, we negotiated at the $212,000.
And I think to add on to that, and that was a cost differential, but there would have also been probably a similar negotiation with the school district, because if you look at where that was located, it was basically one in the middle of one of their ball fields. It was adjacent to and potentially impairing one of their parking lots and so forth. So just the raw number cost differential was what John mentioned, over $300,000. But I think we could have expected that with the school district, they would have needed to have similar concessions made.
Okay.
How long do you anticipate the drilling and that 24-foot sound wall to be?
So that's a great question. The fencing, the chain link fence will be there through drilling and equipping. It'll be two contracts. Only the drilling would require the sound wall. It's my understanding that would be there, if I'm not mistaken, 2 months.
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah.
And there will be periods of 24/7 drilling operations. So we will work closely with the neighbors as well as our public governmental affairs to make sure we mitigate the noise and other impacts to the nearby residents.
Would you like a motion?
If there's no other further questions, we'd like to make the motion, Director Slauson.
Yes, I'll move the item.
Second.
It has been moved by Director Slauson. It has been seconded by Director Armstrong. If we could have a roll call vote, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The item passes 5-0. Move
Thank
on
you.
To item B. Thank you, sir, for a great presentation. Move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize amendment number 2 to the legal services agreement for the District General Counsel OMLO LLP. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. This item is to authorize amendment number 2, our legal services agreement with OMLO. In 2012, the board initiated its relationship with Lemieux and O'Neill as our general counsel. And in 2017, Lemieux and O'Neill merged with Olivares and Madruga, and they formed the current firm, which goes by the name OMLO, or the initials OMLO. We've previously amended the contract in 2018 and have not amended it since then, and OMLO has requested an adjustment to their legal fees. So if you look at the way the contract's structured, there are two elements to the legal fees. First, under our current contract, first, a rate of $225 per hour is charged for all the transactional services. This includes attending district board meetings, legal advice, consultation, drafting agreements, travel, et cetera. So it's a vast, vast majority of our costs are billed at the $225 an hour. We also have a second element in the agreement, whereas what I would call extraordinary services or litigation are billed at a in accordance with a fee schedule that's provided in Exhibit A. Since the rates have not been increased since 2018, AMLO has requested a kind of a two-element adjustment to their rates. First, they're requesting that the rate for their associates be adjusted to from $225 an hour, and then $250 an hour for partners. So they would have a split rate for the basic transactional services. And if you look at how we utilize AMLO currently, about 75% of the billed hours in 2020, for example, were billed to associates. So about three quarters are billed to associates. They're also requesting that we include a cost of living adjustment periodically, and that would be based on the consumer price index applicable to Riverside County, but would have a cap of 3%. So each year the contract would be adjusted. There would be a 3% maximum cap rate adjustment to those legal fees. The other thing we looked at was what are other law firms charging. We looked at several other firms. For example, IUA's attorneys, they charge $300 per hour kind of across the board. Water Replenishment District of Southern California, $300 to $350. And we looked at a couple of firms in Orange County for Orange County districts, and they charge $275 to $400. So if you look at our overall fees, they're very comparable, if not a little bit less than some of those other agencies. So what we're asking the board today is to approve and authorize the execution of the Amendment Number 2 to the Legal Services Agreement, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
President Pauly?
Yes, Director Record.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I think the rates are very reasonable, but I'd also like to just state for the record that I think the representation has been really good. And we've been successful in a lot of issues that we've pushed on, and I think they've done a great job for us. I've moved this item.
It has been moved by Director Record, and before we get a second, if I could just chime in, I have the opportunity in my professional career to deal with a lot of public attorneys, public agency attorneys. I cannot say enough good things about Stephen O'Neill and the service he provides this district. I think it's outstanding, and if nobody else minds, I would like to second this item.
Well, I would just make a comment, and that is, don't tell Steve, but I'm surprised they didn't ask for a little higher increase.
Don't give him any ideas.
On the line.
So we have a motion by Director.
The motion can still be amended, President.
And I just want to say from staff's standpoint, we work with them obviously on a day-to-day basis, and the level of service is excellent. We would certainly support those comments that have been made.
So we have a motion by Director Record. I have seconded the item. May I have a roll call, please?
Director Pauly.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Armstrong.
Aye.
Director Record.
Aye.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Neill, did you want to make any comments on this item?
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for the board's consideration and approval of this. And, you know, it's really a real privilege for our firm, and especially me, to be able to represent Eastern, because, from top to bottom, you guys are top-notch in terms of the quality at board level and certainly the quality at the staff level. It's really, really a privilege. And I'm happy that we have this structure, because I think we're doing a good job about integrating our associates, specifically Chelsea Schroff and Martin Kosanowicz, into staff, so staff can call someone like Chelsea or Martin directly, which will help keep costs down for the district. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Neill. I'll make one final comment on the item now that it has passed. I know that someday we will come back to in-person meetings, and if I had been your firm, I would have negotiated for a Tesla charging station in the parking lot. But maybe in the next time around, Mr. O'Neill. So thank you again, and great service. We will go on to item C, which is to approve and authorize a contract with James W. Fowler Company for $13.9 million under specification number 1404W, Murrieta Road Transmission Pipeline Project, and additional appropriations in the amount of $17,332,000. Good morning, Mr. Kowalski.
Good morning, Mr. President, fellow members of the board. I'm happy to be here today to present to you our Murrieta Road Pipeline. By way of background, we continue to advance our desalination program, and with the added facilities, we now look to increase the conveyance capacity accordingly. We have the added facility of Paris II Desalter, which adds 5.5 million gallons per day at our desalination complex. And with that, we look to advance this project under three headings. Murrieta Road Pipeline itself, and then two portions that are within the footprint of the desalination complex, the Paris Valley South Pipeline and a small portion of the Brackish Water Feed Pipeline. As you can see on the diagram on the right, we will continue to look at conveyance capacity and expand it in the future and along Valley Boulevard and McLaughlin Road in cities of Menifee and Paris. This particular project's located in the city of Paris. By way of project overview for Murrieta Road itself, the project's located from the Desalter Complex to La Piedra Road. It advances a little over a mile of 36-inch diameter pipeline with a significant 42-inch diameter crossing at Salt Creek. This will be micro-tunneled. In addition, we will construct a temporary pedestrian walkway on Salt Creek to maintain pedestrian traffic through construction and to facilitate partial closure. We've been working closely with the city of Menifee to coordinate this work. We have extensive traffic control plans and to accommodate this closure and construction. We'll also coordinate with the work and completion of Paris II Desalter and the local city pavement repaving program. By way of background for the footprint within Paris Desalter complex, we will advance about 1,000 feet of 36-inch diameter pipeline, including an interconnection and bypass within the footprint of the facility to ensure that we're stubbed out in Valley Boulevard in the future for future pipelines to continue. We will also advance the necessary restoration work, and everything has been designed to incorporate the future expansion of Valley Boulevard to Murrieta Road per the city's future plan. In addition, similarly, we look to extend a portion of the Brackish Pipeline out into Valley Boulevard so that everything can continue on Valley Boulevard North. We are currently coordinating with the Army Corps for a Brackish transmission pipeline. That project will be completed, design will be completed in 2024, whereby we will extend this pipeline north all the way along Valley Boulevard to McLaughlin to interconnect to provide hydraulic reliability for the feed water system of the desalination system. Last year, we looked to pre-qualify bidders for this project due to the complexity and order magnitude of this project. We're looking for general engineering contractors that had the appropriate experience and financial liquidity to advance this work. We put a solicitation out and we received 11 proposals. We were able to pre-qualify 9 general engineering contractors to complete the work. With that, we had advertised the project earlier this year to the pre-qualified contractors, and we received 5 bids. And with that, the lowest responsive and responsible bidder was James W. Fowler Company with a bid amount of just below $14 million. This is about 18.5% below the engineer's estimate. And 2 bids following this bid were in close proximity, which demonstrated a clear understanding of the bid documents and plans and specifications. The engineer's estimate was $17.1 million, And James W. Fowler has worked for the district and has completed work in a satisfactory manner. In addition to the general engineering construction contract, we look to advance an engineering support services contract with the engineer of record, Gannett Fleming. They've identified three key subconsultants to support the effort: Black & Veatch for the in-desalination complex work, and Mott MacDonald for the trenchless construction work at Salt Creek, and then RF Jaeger for corrosion services. The scope of work for this effort includes bid support as well as the typical engineering support services such as shop drawings, review of change orders, requests for information, as well as micro-tunneling field support work. In addition to Gannett Fleming, we have other support services needed. Our geotech of record, Layton, will provide geotechnical observation and testing, and Cozad and Fox will provide the necessary surveying and construction staking for the project. We'll also utilize the services of SOMAS for cultural and biological resource monitoring during construction. This includes a nesting bird survey, the necessary cultural and tribal monitoring, and reporting for the project. By way of schedule, we look to advance the project as soon as possible upon award today. The Paris II desalter construction, we don't look to start that work until October of 2021, when the Paris II desalter is complete, and we look to complete the project in about a little over a year from today. With that, our recommendation today are to advance a general engineering contract with James Fowler Company in the amount of approximately $13.9 million. Also advance a contract with Gannett Fleming for engineering services during construction in the amount of approximately $600,000. Also advance a contract with Layton for the geotechnical observation and testing in the amount of approximately $120,000. Yet another contract with SOMAS for the cultural and biological monitoring services needed in the amount of approximately $150,000. Administrative award of other ancillary contracts to complete this work. And today we're requesting additional appropriation of $17.3 million, taking the total project cost to just under $19 million. With that, I'd like to entertain any questions.
Any questions? Director Armstrong, any questions?
I don't have any questions. I would comment that the Paris desalter complex itself, the progress looks really good on that. As I drive by it and look at it and see it changing, you know, every week, it looks really nice.
Thank you.
Director Records, any questions on this item?
No. Good presentation.
Would you like to move the item, and Mr. Armstrong?
I'll make that motion.
Okay. Moved by Director Armstrong.
I'll second.
Second by Director Corona. Would you please call the roll?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And the item passes 5-0. Thank you, sir, for that good presentation. Move to item D, which is to approve and authorize a 2-year as-needed engineering non-design service agreement in the full term, not to exceed a total of $2.9 million.
President Pauly, we'd like to take items D, E, and F together.
I was going to ask.
Three as-needed agreements, and Chris is going to give an overview of the overall process that we use for the as-needed agreements and the selection.
And legal counsel, we could take those in one motion, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Would you please proceed then with item D, E, and F?
Chris, you need to pull the microphone up, too.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. This presentation split into two parts, with the first focusing on the district's as-needed consultant program and the second covering specific contracts up for consideration under action items D, E, and F. The purpose of the district's as-needed consultant program is to retain qualified consultants where all contract terms and conditions are negotiated up front so that there are no administrative delays in issuing assignments to our consultants. Consultants in these categories provide day-to-day service as well as project-specific support. And through the as-needed consultant program, the district demonstrates its due diligence in selecting the best qualified consultants to help carry out the district's mission, which is of utmost importance to our ratepayers and constituents. The district follows a systematic qualifications-based selection process as part of the program. A cross-functional team of staff review and score each proposal with based on the standard evaluation criteria shown on the screen. The criteria are listed in order of importance. So firm and personnel qualifications and experience have the highest weighting because of the type of work performed by the professionals we select. Hourly rates and local office are also a consideration when selecting firms. Once master agreements are approved by the board, staff issue task orders to consultants for specific work. Each task order is less than $100,000, and contract staff are able to quickly generate those assignments to consultants. The program allows consulting firms without prior district experience to perform services on smaller projects. Additionally, the list of as-needed consultants serve as a pool for larger district projects. Per the district's administrative code, staff may select consultants on the as-needed list without competition for work totaling less than $250,000. Any work over $250,000 requires formal solicitation, and of course any assignments over $100,000 require board approval. And a final note, staff start from scratch with each board-approved and authorized category service. Cumulative funds are not carried forward in subsequent terms. There are a total of 23 as-needed consulting service categories, ranging from the engineering services that I'll describe here shortly, as well as computer and technology consultants, environmental and inspection services consultants. To summarize the program, the strength of it is really that staff have the expert consultant resources that they need in order to carry out their duties. All right, part two specifically addresses action items D, E, and F. So three categories of service are covered under request for qualifications or RFQ number 3340. 3341, and 3342. Each RFQ includes between three and five disciplines of service. So, for example, with 3340, as-needed engineering design, that includes pipeline design, potable and recycled water storage and conveyance design, lift station design, structural engineering, and electrical engineering. These disciplines are organized by a category service for administrative efficiency, which resulted in the three solicitations shown on the screen instead of one separate solicitation for each of the 12 disciplines described herein. The district received a robust response from the consultant community. Solicitations were advertised very broadly, with 244 firms downloading the RFQs. And in total, 74 proposals were received, with that number broken down by each respective solicitation. These results were in line with past iterations of these solicitations. All right, action item F. As previously mentioned, the as-needed engineering design services solicitation includes five disciplines of service shown on the table. Across the five disciplines, the district issued over $1.5 million in task orders to the 21 firms since April 2019. Of the new firms, more than 20% of the recommended agreements will be going to those new firms, and almost half of the firms recommended for award have a local presence. So staff recommend that the board approve and authorize 25 agreements totaling $2.25 million. Up next is action item D. So this is as-needed engineering non-design services, which includes field survey, geotechnical, facilities planning, and condition assessment discipline, which was newly added for this solicitation. Expenditures totaled $2 million for the April 2019 to January 2021 period. Slightly more than 30% of the recommended agreements are for new firms, and two-thirds of the firms are considered local to the district. So staff recommend that the board approve and authorize 25 agreements, totaling $2,905,000. Last but not least, action item E for as-needed plan check services. Consultants in this category of service support, development plan check process, and consultant fees are paid by developers seeking municipal service. Staff have utilized roughly $1.9 million over the past 21 months. We are recommending one new firm to be added to all three disciplines in this category of service. And so staff recommend that the board approve and authorize 10 agreements totaling $2,650,000. With the term, agreement term, so since 2009, the district's as-needed professional services consultant program has made a maintained a two-year agreement term. Staff created and distributed a survey to our consultant base and to district staff who evaluate proposals. The purpose of the survey was to understand how the two-year cycle affects both groups. Results showed that both internal and external participants prefer a term longer than 2 years. So staff is proposing a new two-year term with one optional one-year extension. This will create administrative efficiencies for district staff as well as our consultant pool. And this will incentivize high-performing consultant firms with the potential to extend their agreements. Staff will return to the board with recommendations to exercise the option and request additional funding if necessary. So with all of that said, staff recommend that the board approve and authorize as-needed agreements in the full term, not to exceed totals shown on their screen. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
Director Corona first.
I have a this is for you and for council. These are not for specific projects. Is that correct? This is simply firms that we're going to deal with and on an as-needed basis.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so no.
I'll tell you the reason why I'm asking the question because Krieger and Stewart is on the list, and I have typically recused myself from any votes regarding Krieger and Stewart because our family does business with them. And I'm just wondering if, since this is not a specific project or anything, this is just one of a number of firms that we use from time to time, whether I need to recuse myself or not on this. So maybe Steve can
tell me. Yeah, Steve answer that.
What he thinks.
Dr. Corona, before maybe legal counsel weighs in, I just want to clarify to your point, this is authorization to enter into an umbrella contract with each of the firms. There is no specific project that is being authorized today. Once we have the umbrella contract in place, as projects are identified, then we will engage the consultants that have been pre-selected. So you are correct. There is no specific project that the board is considering today.
And there's no guarantee that Krieger and Stewart will receive any of the contracts.
That's correct.
Right. Yes.
Being careful.
No, I think it's good. And General Counsel, could you please give us your thoughts on this?
Sure. If Director Corona feels that there may be a potential conflict, as I look at it, Krieger and Stewart is implicated in item E
and F.
The plan checking. Is that correct?
E and F.
E and F. Okay. So if he feels that there may be a potential conflict, which is, of course, hard to determine at this time because we don't know what specific project they would be potentially engaged on or if at all. But, Director Cuono, if you feel that you may have a conflict because of another relationship with Krieger and Stewart, I'd recommend that you recuse yourself from voting on items E and F. In an abundance of caution, you could act on item D, of course, but to ensure that there is no potential for conflict, I'd recommend that you just recuse yourself on E and F.
Okay. I think that's a good idea because Krieger and Stewart could be awarded a contract by staff that was in your division, for example, and there could be a potential contract that you'd be unaware of. So I
the
think
the list of consultants is pretty big. So I,
yeah. I feel oh, I agree. So
sorry.
Yeah. So
we'll take separate votes on this. Director Slauson, did you have a question?
No, I don't.
Okay, Director Record, do you have any questions on this item or these items?
No, I don't.
I had one, and Joe, maybe you could answer it for me. So we have this list of consultants. Let's say, in your opinion, a year from now, one of them is not living up to the standards of Eastern. How do we deal with that?
If their work performance is not satisfactory, we will not award them any task
okay,
orders.
So we don't have to take them off the list as a board item?
No, we would simply not award them any tasks.
Your correct. Group would make that determination.
That is correct.
All right. Very good. With that.
President.
Yes, sir.
President Pauly, I'd recommend then, because of the Director Corona situation, that it might be best to move D independently and then E and F. If it's the board's pleasure, they can move B and F together.
We will do that. So with that, I will look for a motion and a second on item D.
I'll make that motion.
Director Corona makes the motion.
Second.
Director Armstrong makes a second, and may have a roll call, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The item passes 5-0. We will now take up E and F, and I'll ask Director Corona if you'd like to excuse yourself from the dais. And for the record, I will note that Director Corona is no longer on the dais. I will then ask for a motion on items E and F. Director Armstrong makes the motion.
I'll second it.
Director Slauson seconds it. May I have a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Corona? Director Record?
Aye.
That motion passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent from the dais. With that, we will go to item number 7, but before we do, why don't we take a 10-minute break?
It was kind of funny.
We will, if everyone could grab a seat, we will reconvene the meeting. We will go to item number 7, which is our informational items. And today we have a presentation on the redistricting of the Board of Directors division boundaries. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. So this presentation is just going to be just a quick overview of the forthcoming update to the division boundaries once we get the 2020 census data released. So jumping right into it, the director division boundaries, they're set based on the Municipal Water District Law of 1911. And this law itself actually references the Elections Code, which specifies that the boundaries need to be adjusted after the completion of a census to ensure that, as much as practicable, the divisions are equal in population. And the code also notes that these adjustments beyond population can consider some additional factors, such as topography and geography, ensuring that the divisions are cohesive and contiguous, and that they represent the demographics and communities of interest that lie within each of the divisions. And so a big driver of why we need to do this is since the census, obviously there's a pretty significant interval between census years, the divisions can become unbalanced because population growth and development doesn't necessarily occur evenly. One of the things that we do try to do when we've set division boundaries in the past is we've tried to kind of account for the impact of future development to some degree based on the information that we have available. And so we have this chart here that just shows, starting in 2000, these were the populations in each of the divisions when we kind of did this process at that time. And then you can see by 2010, this next lighter blue bar, Division 5 had kind of you know, fallen behind the other four divisions in terms of population. And so when we last went through this process in 2010 and we, you know, realigned the divisions, we can see the green bar that just popped up. You know, we've kind of got the divisions more equitably distributed again. And so we'll be going through this process again in 2020, and we'll kind of see, you know, where what we're looking like in terms of the population. In terms of a timeline, originally the Census Bureau was set to release the data in April, but they've communicated that due to delays caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, they're now looking to release the data by the end of September. And so the process for updating these division boundaries is going to start by basically adjusting the census data to match our district boundaries. And I have this figure on the right here that kind of just gives an example of this. And I will note that we will be doing this adjustment at the census block level, but at the time of the presentation was put together, we didn't have the census block boundaries yet. So this is a census block group boundary, which is a bigger area, but the concept is the same. So the blue highlighted area is our district service area. The red boundary represents, you know, the area that we would have census data for. And so we would kind of need to, all along our boundary, adjust the census data, because there's going to be population that we need to include because it's in our service area, and then there's population that we're going to need to exclude because it lies, you know, the people that we don't serve. And so we'll start by proportioning the population to make sure that we have an accurate count of of customers that we're actually serving. Then we'll go ahead and kind of evaluate that total that we saw on the previous slide and evaluate what the population is based on the current boundaries. And then if, you know, we find imbalances, then we'll realign the director divisions by moving census blocks between the boundaries so that we can get roughly equal populations. And this will be an iterative process, and we envision generating multiple alignments for review from executive committee and legal counsel and iterating through that and incorporating their comments as we move towards a final alignment. Once we have that final alignment, we will finalize with getting a legal description generated, and then we'll bring it to the board for a resolution. Once that is adopted, then we go ahead and we update the county and also, you know, all our internal spatial databases and such. One element that we're looking at including during this cycle that wasn't part of the previous cycle is including a demographic analysis to kind of inform how we'll be splitting the census blocks between the, if the division boundaries need to be adjusted, how we would group some of those census blocks. This would better allow us to address the element of the elections code that, you know, discusses grouping populations based on demographics and communities of interest. And so some of the attributes that are available in the census data include things like household income and housing characteristics. And we'll obviously include legal counsel and have them review the alignments just to ensure that we're remaining in compliance with any applicable statutes. In terms of next steps, we'll continue to monitor any information that the Census Bureau releases with respect to their timeline. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, it already got pushed back a couple months from April to September, but you know, we'll keep track of that. Once we get the census data, we'll go ahead and complete the analysis that I described and put together the draft boundary adjustments, after which we'll hold an informational work session with the board. We'll review the draft division boundaries, you know, get feedback and comments, and make modifications as needed based on that input. Once we have an alignment that, you know, we're kind of feeling good about, we'll do public outreach and have the board meeting where we approve the amended division boundaries. So that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions? Gordon, I appreciate it. You have a lot of work ahead of you. This is, as I pointed out to another group, this is something we only do every 10 years. So, but it is important, and there is a lot that's going into probably different than 10 years ago as far as communities of interest and things like that. So I look forward as the process moves forward.
and keeping the board informed as you make headway on it.
Sounds great.
I'm sorry, let me ask, I forgot. Director Record, do you have any comments or questions? I apologize.
It's okay. No, I don't. Good okay. presentation.
Very well. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, thank you.
Gordon. All right. With that, we'll go to item 8, which is to receive and file our standard reports and committee meetings, and I will go ahead and make the motion to approve item 8.
I'll second it.
Director Slauson seconds it. May I have a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Very good. That passes 5-0. With that, we will go to our calendar review. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. There are no new events at this time, so we'll begin the calendar review on page 2. This is the board's master calendar for the next 2 weeks. Beginning this evening at 6 p.m., we have the Mead Valley Municipal Advisory Council. That's for Director Armstrong's calendar. They will meet at 6 p.m. at the Mead Valley Community Center. And beginning tomorrow, March 4th, to Thursday, March 11th, the Monday morning group will hold its legislative meetings, and that's on Director Record's calendar. Thursday, March 4th as well, at 11:30 a.m., the Joint Inland and Orange County Caucuses will meet, Director Record's calendar. And tomorrow at 4 p.m., the Board Administrative Committee will meet, Directors Pauly and Slauson. And for tomorrow evening at 6 p.m., the Good Hope Municipal Advisory Council will meet in Paris, and that's for Director Armstrong's calendar. On Monday, March 8th and Tuesday, March 9th, the Metropolitan Water District Committee and Board meetings will be held. Director Record will participate. On Tuesday, March 9th, the Aqua Finance Committee will meet telephonically at 10 a.m., and that's Director Armstrong's calendar. On Wednesday, March 10th at 7:30 a.m., Director Pauly has an update meeting with the General Manager in Paris. Mm-hmm. And Thursday, March 11th, Director Slauson has an update meeting with General Manager Jones at 7:30 a.m. On Thursday, March 11th at 8:30 a.m., the Rancho California Water District Board will meet, and Director Corona is scheduled to attend. And at 3:30 p.m. on March 11th, the Board Planning Committee will meet, Director Record and Director Corona's calendars. Tuesday, March 16th, the SAPA Commission meeting will be held at 9:30 a.m. telephonically, and that's Director Slauson's calendar. Moving to page 3, we have some upcoming conferences and key events. Just a reminder that the Aqua Virtual Legislative Conference will be held on March 11th. It's a Thursday at 9 a.m. Paul Jones is scheduled to attend if anyone else is interested in participating. And we also have some spots available for the Water Reuse Virtual Annual Conference. And that's March 15th through the 25th. They're half-day sessions each day. And I can get more information if anyone would like to participate. So below that, we have the upcoming board and board committee meetings. Just a note that a special board administrative committee meeting has been added for March 18th at 9 a.m. All other meetings are on schedule. On the last page, we have the upcoming joint interagency meetings. Are there any questions or changes to the calendar?
I have none. Any other directors have comments on the calendar? See none. Thank you very much, Nicole.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And we will go to directors' activity reports, and we will start with Director Armstrong.
Let's see, the Urban Water Institute Spring Conference, I attended that. That was a virtual conference. Just a couple highlights from that. One of the sessions was with various managers from different water districts, and they all shared about the whole COVID experience over the last year and challenges and things that they've done to mitigate and deal with it. And so that was interesting. I think it pretty much all the things that Eastern here is doing, you know, you kind of heard the same things being done elsewhere. So it sounded like Eastern's, you know, right up there doing all the best practices there. Probably the biggest, I would say, theme that I got from there was a sentiment about, I guess, I don't know, growing urgency about a Delta fix, and really the voluntary agreements that are really sort of key. And I know Director Record has talked about that a little bit, and I don't know that I'm an expert on what the voluntary agreements are, but there seems to be very shared interest in getting that done to solve that. So hopefully that will move forward. And then on February 24th, I attended the DC virtual conference where we had representatives, congressional representatives from California, all making short little presentations virtually. And really, I think the three that stood out to me were Jared Hoffman, Ken Calvert, and John Garamendi, all seemed extremely knowledgeable and optimistic about Congress's actions for things like WIN Act, water smart programs, and just really a focus on infrastructure, including a focus on water infrastructure. They cited a study by the EPA that said there's about $800 billion in water infrastructure needs per that study. So there seems to be some awareness and support, at least from our congressional representatives, for water and for water needs in California. So that's my update.
All right. Appreciate it very much. DSAL Executive Committee, we talked a little about some of the legislative activities going on, some good and bad for DSAL in California in the upcoming legislature. I attended the Hemet San Jacinto Water Master meeting as the representative for Eastern, and the main thing was adopting the new assessments for the upcoming year, which we successfully did, and I believe lowered them slightly based on the Water Master advisor's recommendations and the financial position of the Water Master, and got some more updates on general water conditions in the basin. And then the Western Riverside Council of Governments, as we had an executive committee meeting last on Monday, and the main topic was, as we heard today, that Rick Bishop was stepping down, and the process that we're going to go through in order to locate a new executive director, which is going to have, like here at Eastern, big shoes to fill when that process takes place. So, and most of that was a closed session item. So that's my report. And then Director Record.
So February 23rd, MWD Standing Committee meetings, including IRP, Audit and Ethics, Bay Delta, and Executive Committee. Nothing unusual to report there. I would say, though, that earlier this week, the City of San Fernando appointed Adon Ortega to be their representative, taking over from Sylvia Ballin. So welcome, Adon, back to the board.
Director Record, could I stop you for a second and ask you just a question, because I don't know the answer to. What was it, Director Ortega from the Fullerton area?
That's correct.
But you can do that at Met.
That's correct. And he was replaced, and I'm not sure exactly what happened, but I do know that he and Director Ballin worked closely together, and I'm just sensing that probably Director Ballin is the mayor of San Fernando, and maybe she has a pretty good workload, but she wanted to see Adon continue on the board. So it was a 3-2 vote, and so Adon will be back with us.
I appreciate you clarifying. I wasn't aware that you could represent different geographical areas, but I learned something this week, so thank you.
You know, the representation on the board is up to the member agency, and you don't have to be part of the agency or even live in the area. So it's whoever you want to have as your rep, you can appoint.
Thank you for clarifying that for me. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
MWD meetings, recycled water use discussion with Paul and, I can't remember the other guy's name. He's sitting right there in front of you. But good discussion about the future. Urban Water Institute virtual spring conference. Yeah, following up on Director Armstrong's comments, voluntary agreements have been in the process for a long time, and it is what it says. It's a voluntary action by water users and lots of agencies to determine how to best manage reduced flows that the State Water Resources Control Board will be implementing sometime in the future. And it includes contributions of money and all kinds of things. And there are people that say it's probably the most important discussion that's happened in water in a long time. Unfortunately, with the animosity between the Newsom administration and the Trump administration, there's lots of litigation. And for a time, those talks were stopped. And all the stakeholders feel that it's really important. And so we need to kind of get that back on track and try to get that resolved. The other takeaway I had is a lot of talk about SGMA. And it's just going to be some tremendous impacts to the state, especially in agriculture. And there's a lot of concern, and we'll see what happens. It has to be implemented. There's groundwater basins that are really in duress, and so it's really up to the state to backstop the law and make it happen. So we'll see. Sorry about forgetting your name, Jeff. That's my report.
All right. Very good. Director Slauson.
Yes. I attended the Moreno Valley Chamber of Commerce meeting on the 24th. Kaiser Permanente was the sponsor, and they gave update on COVID-19. There were updates from the city and as well as the school district from Moreno Valley Unified. And the March Museum announced they were going to receive an F-16 Fighting Falcon to display.
To just display, right?
What?
To just display, right?
Just
not,
display.
Not use. Okay.
Not,
okay,
not
good.
To use
okay,
at
good.
My whim.
Okay,
so,
good.
You're right.
And I attended the SAPA commission meeting yesterday, and we discussed the we appointed Bruce Whitaker's commission vice chair, and as the convener for the OOL steering committee, we had a report on AB 377 and some of the impacts that we would anticipate if that were to pass, and had an update from the legislative report from West Coast Advisors. I attended the project area project agreement 24 committee yesterday, while Paul was tending to his grandchildren and making sure everything went fine with his new 9-pound, 9-ounce
yes.
baby boy. And we received reports on the Prado Reservoir because they're going to have to seal a number of the access manholes, access structures, because they're raising the outlet and increasing the storage for Prado by raising the dam levee and putting a number of our facilities under water. So they're going to have to seal those. We had an update on the brine line reach foray, upper corrosion repairs. And then, most excitingly, we had a 1.5-hour virtual tour of the entire, of all the reaches with VRSAPA. And I suspect that's why Paul really didn't want to come. And it was a bird's eye view, and they strolled through all of the reaches, and that was good. We also saw, because we have air release valves and blow-offs and access manholes, and we saw individual pictures of each and every one of them. They all looked the same, but nonetheless, it was very exciting. I know the system a lot better, though. That's it.
All right. Very good. Did you have...
I didn't have
it. Oh, you didn't. Okay. Just want to make sure I didn't miss you. With that, we'll go to directors' comments or future agenda items. Do any directors have a comment? Director Clark?
I had a comment. I wanted to commend Paul on his social distancing practices. I don't know if you noticed it earlier today when we had the new mascot out. He gave Savvy a high five. And last year... he gave Patrick the Pooh a big, giant hug twice in one day. So,
The world has changed a lot.
Seems like that left a mark on you.
That's right. I mean, I have a photograph of it, so...
Director Record, do you have any future agenda items or any director's comments?
Not at this time, thank you.
All right, very good. I wanted to make one comment that I brought to the attention. I happened to be monitoring some social media in French Valley and on Nextdoor, and there was a long discussion about some kids that were playing in manhole covers, which caught my attention because I'm pretty sure that's not a good play place, and I was able to contact the management here, and we got right on that, and... So it's just, like I said, I want to commend everybody for moving on that right away. And with that, it's my only comment. With that, I understand we have a need for closed session. Is that correct, Mr. O'Neill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have a closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957, General Manager Recruitment Update.
Very good. So we will take about 5 minutes to change over to closed session, if that's okay.
Thank you.
Back into open session, and I would like legal counsel to report out the closed session item.
Can you imagine that happening now?
I know.
Steve is going to report out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 to discuss public employment general manager recruitment update. Instruction was given to staff and to the district's consultant. No formal action was taken by the board. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. With that, we will adjourn this meeting until our next regular scheduled meeting on Wednesday, March 17th at 9 a.m. Thank you, everyone.
Excuse me.
Yes, Director Record. I'm sorry.
I thought we had one more discussion item for today.
That's a separate briefing with Director Armstrong and you, Director
okay.
Record.
Okay.
Got it.
Is that going to occur,
sorry about that.
Shayla?
We had it scheduled for, I believe, 1 o'clock. But anytime you guys are available.
Okay. Could you contact Jolene?
Yes.
And why don't we set that up for 2:17, if that would be okay?
Yeah, we already have it up there. So. Yeah.
Director Armstrong, is that okay? So, Director Record, when we get everybody together, we'll recontact you.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right.